Because of the national debt, the average citizen in America reportedly owes to the federal government about $150,000 each. Pay up, folks. Former U.S. Senator Tom Coburn has written a new book called Smashing the D.C. Monopoly, and he joins us now. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and this is Vocal Point. Senator Tom Coburn, so great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's an honor and privilege to be able to join you. I love your work.
Okay. Well, you're very kind. All right. So first of all, let me read this from your own press release about the book. Having spent more than 16 years fighting government fraud and irresponsibility, Senator Tom Coburn reveals that at least $400 billion could be saved annually by eliminating waste and duplication in the federal government. Just $400 billion a year, and that would be a good start.
Yeah, it's out there. We passed a law requiring transparency that all the federal spending is now online except for national security and personal data like Medicare and Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
With that, we also passed a requirement for the Government Accountability Office to review every government program. And so these really aren't my numbers. These are the General Accountability's office, General Accounting Office's, cumulative numbers as now they've done this for 7 years. And so some of it's been eliminated, a very small portion, about maybe 30 or 40 billion, but they've added another 30, 40 billion in waste and fraud and duplication to that.
Mm.
So the question is who's working on that in Washington? And the answer is nobody.
Mm. And what's
because
this?
Politicians by nature don't want to spend their time cutting money that goes to individuals in the country. They don't want to embrace the moral action of not wasting our children's money and our children's future,
mm-hmm.
because they really have a goal of getting reelected more than they do of being a good steward for the future and for today.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real conflict of interest. I left early because I didn't see a way for us to fix that in Washington, because that's human nature. So we have a way to fix that, and that's called Article 5 of the Constitution.
Okay, explain that, please.
Well, let me first say that when I tell people about this, people get a smile on their face, because people are so frustrated with Washington, they think they can't do anything about it. And Article 5 was put in there by our founders for the very purpose of allowing us as citizens to do something about it. And so Article 5 allows for 34 of the states, or two-thirds of the states, to pass a resolution calling for an amendments convention. And it's very specific, and you have to have the same application in every state, and you have to achieve 34 before the Congress has to call a convention. But the fact is, you know, we as Americans can force that to happen, and we can actually cause them to have a balanced budget. We can actually cause them to live within their means. We can actually limit their terms. We can actually limit the size and scope and jurisdiction of the federal government and restore decision-making back to our communities and our states.
Hmm.
Right now, 60% of almost every state's budget is mandated by rules and regulations from unelected bureaucrats. And I'm talking about the money that they raise inside their state that their state house then tells them how to spend. There's a federal bureaucrat that says, oh, no, you can't spend it that way. So we have now a federal government that controls 60% of the state's decisions, all of the federal decisions. And so the big question becomes, is who gets to decide about our future? Is it unelected Washington bureaucrats and long-sitting judges who have long lost their ability to look at the facts of our Constitution as it was intended? Or is it us as individuals? And it doesn't matter if you're on the left or the right. When you ask people that question, they say, I ought to decide. Or at least I ought to be able to influence my state legislature on how he or she decides.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see that. So the wonderful thing is this is a tool that our founders gave us that, matter of fact, Colonel George Mason stood up, and this is the only thing that was not argued at the Constitutional Convention. Because he made the following plea. How many of you know any central government, any power anywhere that has voluntarily ceded back power to the very people that they govern? And, of course, in history, it's never happened. Mm-hmm. You know, we have seen Cincinnatus give up his position and George Washington, but they didn't cede the power. The power was in Congress. So the fact is no government's ever done it, and what we want is the ability to rebalance and restore the Constitution to its intended directions and purposes. And if we don't, then the consequences. And you gave a figure of $150,000.
Each.
Well, that's not anywhere close. Mm. The average family owes over $1 million.
What?
The average millennial will have to pay back $1.7 million over the next 50 years. So that's $30,000 a year for the average millennial. Well, their average net worth right now is a minus $30,000.
Wow.
So it isn't going to happen. So everything's going to crumble. So what we ought to be about is fixing that and having the foresight to stand up and say, wait a minute, we're out of balance. The federal government's gotten way too big. It doesn't know what it's doing, and what it's doing, it doesn't do very well. All you got to do is look at health care and look at the VA and the Indian Health Service and say, do you want more government health care? And fix this for our kids and our grandkids.
Yeah. It's really unconscionable. I mean, it's like a parent going to their child's room in the middle of the night and then stealing their piggy bank, taking all the money, and then writing an IOU, you know, and then putting the piggy bank back, and the poor kid's got to pay lots of money that they don't have.
That's right. What will actually happen? There'll be a marked decrease in standard of living because they're not going to be able to pay this back. So the central bank, the Federal Reserve, will create more and more paper money, so the value of everything you own will decline in value.
Mm.
So living standard. Remember, the standard of living right now in our country is the same as it was. Median family income is the same as it was in 1988.
Whoa.
And our millennials have never seen America as it can be and great as it has been. What they've seen over the last 30 years is a decline in both the moral leadership and the economic leadership of our country. And it doesn't matter which party's in power.
Well, I don't agree. In all fairness, I mean, isn't it true that the federal debt under Barack Obama just went from about, what, $5 trillion or something like that to $20 trillion, or was it more like $9 trillion up to $20 trillion?
9 to 19.
Okay, and 9 to 19.
True.
Yeah.
But the fact is you know, the president before him, when you had a Republican Congress, didn't do anything about it either.
Yeah. But he didn't add to it as much as.
Well, but you didn't ever have the Great Recession that they had faced either.
Right.
So the point is none of them are innocent.
Right. Oh, I agree.
None of them concentrate on fixing the real problems. There are exceptions. I'm not saying every member of Congress and every senator. What I'm saying is, on average, the vast majority of the two-thirds of the Senate that's never had a real job isn't working on issues that will have positive impact for our kids and our grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're working on issues that make them look good at home so they can get reelected.
So, you know, in a very real sense, when we watch, let's say, the political advertisements or we watch the political debates and the candidate says, you know, I brought such and such project to our home state, blah, 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 we should all of a sudden think, okay, well, what did that cost that state? What did that cost the federal government? This is when you're bringing home the bacon to our particular district, somebody's got to pay for that, and this is adding to the debt. Is that how we ought to think, in a sense?
Well, we ought to think about that, but if whatever they're bringing themselves, every other congressman is getting an equal amount. So what you're doing is spending money that you don't have on things that you don't necessarily absolutely have to have. So that's why we're in the trouble we're in.
Yeah.
I mean, think about this. There are multiple studies that show $800 billion a year is spent on health care that doesn't do any good. All right? But if you go to try to buy health care, you can't find out what it costs. So the way to fix health care is to do what we do in every other aspect of our economy, save education and health care. And that is allow real market forces to work, price discovery to work, and incentivize people to buy the best, and both incentivize the providers to be the best and reward excellence, and incentivize the people who are purchasing health care to buy it the best value they can. We can't do that today because you can't find out outcomes and you can't find out price. So if you want to fix health care tomorrow in America, just mandate a law from federal government as all prices and all outcomes have to be published. And then people will start saying, well, I can get that CT. In Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I live now, you can get an MRI for your total spine for $750.
What?
At an outpatient facility. But if you go to a hospital and get it done, it's almost $4,000. So why would you buy something that costs $4,000 when you can buy it for $800? You wouldn't. Still, it doesn't matter.
Isn't that amazing? All right, now going back to this Article 5 in the section, are you talking about just a regular standard amending the Constitution, like the, you know, the 18th Amendment was prohibition, and then it was rescinded in the 19th Amendment?
The way it works is once you have 34 states, they can only offer amendments within the guidelines of what their application was. So the 12 states that have passed this already are all identical applications. They're applying to say, we want to have a balanced budget amendment with generally accepted accounting principles. We want to limit the scope and jurisdiction of the federal government back to what it was intended. And finally, we want to limit the terms of both elected and appointed officials. So whatever comes out of that amendments convention once you get to 34 states,
right.
States is simply a recommendation to the states. And then, like any other recommended amendment to the Constitution, you have to have 38 states approve it. And it's a no-brainer that 38 states would approve a balanced budget amendment. Right?
Yeah. No,
it's an 85% issue with the American public. And the 15% that aren't for it don't care about the future.
Right. I would think the biggest opposition, at least as far as politicians are concerned, would be any kind of term limits. And it's interesting to note that you honored your pledge to serve only 3 terms in the House of Representatives, going back to private practice as a medical doctor. Then in 2004, you ran for the U.S. Senate, serving 2 terms. So you have honored that principle, but I think a lot of politicians wouldn't. But just having a balanced budget forced on the government, you know, all across the board, I think that would be fantastic if that would go into effect.
Well, but here's the thing. Politicians don't want to make hard choices because they want to get reelected. But we pay them and we elect them to make hard choices.
Yeah.
So if you care more about getting reelected than you do the country, you'll chisel on it and not make the hard choices. So a balanced budget amendment gives them an excuse. It actually gives them a spinal transplant. We had to make hard choices. Here's what we did. We have to balance the budget. Sorry, that's the way it is.
Yeah. No more bridges to nowhere.
84% of Americans believe in term limits.
Wow.
We have it for presidents. We have it for the head of the FBI. I mean, we have it for multiple other institutions. So why would we not do that? The reason that people don't want term limits is because they, either, one, they're having an advantage because they have an inside track. You know, I represented almost 4 million people as a U.S. senator. Not very many people could actually sit down and visit with me every year, right?
Right.
But if the decisions are made in Oklahoma or Florida or every other state, you have much greater access to your state representatives. And you can have input. They can hear your voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole idea is when you have career politicians, their fingers always up in the wind.
Yeah.
What's the best thing for my next election? Martin Luther King, I do a paraphrase of what he said. Cowardice asks the question, is it expedient? Vanity asks the question, is it popular? Character asks the question, is it right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have is a conflict of interest against our own future through career politicians. And that doesn't mean there's not exceptions to it. But the vast majority of people in Washington today that have been there 10 or 15 years,
mm-hmm.
their interest is not in the best interest of the country.
Wow.
It's in the best interest of their career.
Oh, man.
And I say that having seen it up close and personal, both the House and the Senate.
Wow. And on that note, we'll have to end. Smashing the DC Monopoly is the name of the book. Senator Tom Coburn is the author. Is there a website for the book, sir?
Sure. You can go to WND.com, or you can go to Barnes & Noble and buy the book. And you can go to WND's website, and there's all the stories and all the reviews on there for it as well.
Okay, and that's WND.com. Thank you so much, right, sir. Appreciate it.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You.